Number nine. Oh, hello. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. This first hour is sponsored by Andrew S., and he wants to sponsor by Hexa Store. We did this last week, I think. Also a proud supporter of Keeping It Lit. Hexa Store provides online computer backup services for small to medium businesses. To learn more, go to HEXISTOR, HexaStore.com. HexaStore.com. Would you do that for me? Thank you, Andrew. Start out with I don't know what this is. Comes from Gypsy. Listen to this. I just got this at about an hour ago from Gypsy. Gypsy writes, I haven't gone anywhere in the car since Saturday. And today I decided to go to the nursery to get a few plants. I live way out in the country, yet here comes the village street cleaner machine going about 1.5 mile an hour down this country road. I'm guessing that there is no money to fix the damn potholes or put the highway department people to work fixing one of the many bridges over the Erie Canal. Those bridges could really use some work. They closed one last week because it's so dangerous. So I went on my way and saw stores, restaurants, and two service stations closed down. I was humming Dylan's Desolation Row by this time. I did have to pass a huge, shiny Walmart superstore next to a new, shiny Lowe's before I got to my destination. Both parking lots were jam-packed. I really miss our small grocery stores and the Village Hardware Store. Anyway, so I got my flowers and head home. As I pulled into my driveway, the highway department guy on the street sweeper was coming down the other side. He waved, I waved back. He was smiling. The road didn't look any different, though. Gypsy. Uh-huh. That's cool. I like that. That reads like stuff I've read in the New Yorker. All right, Gypsy. Right. That's about it, too, right? Yeah. Jay Bookman is used to be editorial page editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's a little bit too liberal. I don't know how Jay has managed to stay employed at the AJC as a columnist there now. Any form of media in Atlanta is so far right as to render the term right and left inoperable. There is no left in Georgia anywhere, but and not in well, there's a little bit of liberal media still left in Atlanta. Back in the day, I guess it would have been called alternative media. But the AJC, I think it's still owned by the Cox Media Empire. They're the ones who bring you Clark Howard and Neil Bortz. But Jay wrote a piece, I think it's in today's paper, and I just love it. Let me give you the background. There was a bill passed here by the Republicans own every statewide office, the governorship, the House, and the Senate here. I don't know, after the last election, about 15 or 20 Democrats switched over to the Republican Party. I don't know if there are any Democrats left in holding office in Georgia or not. Probably a few, I guess, but Georgia Democrats are, well, they might as well be Republican-lite. I think they really are anyway. Anyway, there was a bill passed. It was House Bill 87. It was a law designed to drive illegal immigrants out of Georgia. And as Jay writes, state officials appear shocked to discover that the bill is, well, driving a lot of illegal immigrants out of Georgia. I mean, it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. All this would be funny if it wasn't so sad. Why is it sad? Well, I'll tell you why. Georgia is primarily an agricultural state. And we used to have car assembly plants here. Matter of fact, they do have a Hyundai plant that opened... I think last year down near Columbus, Georgia. But we used to have American-owned manufacturing plants in Georgia, even in my time here. I've been here about 40 years altogether. But the state's economy primarily is driven by agriculture. So after having enacted this bill, and it was signed by Governor Nathan Deal, keep in mind he was a member of Congress who rode out of Washington, D.C. with a posse behind him. If they would have caught his ass, they would have brought him up on ethics charges. He's a liar. I mean, just a flat-out liar, aside from being a real dumbass cracker. He really, really is stupid. At least our last governor, Sonny Perdue, was a veterinarian. Which means, you know, he had enough scientific background to be a medical person. But Nathan Deal is nothing but an old-time Georgia hustler. So, about a month ago, Governor Deal made a big deal about bringing all the TV cameras into his office as he signed this bill into law. And boy, he was just standing there, his big old white ass, just standing there looking into cameras with that dumb cracker look on his face. Hell yeah, by God. All right, 2 weeks later, with farmers howling, Deal was forced to order a hasty investigation into the impact of the law he had just signed, as if it had all come as quite a surprise to him. Because what has happened, Georgia now has a manpower shortage that is forcing farmers in the state, now, as we're talking, to leave millions of dollars worth of blueberries, onions, and other crops unharvested and rotting in the fields. It's also put some state officials into something of a panic now that they realize the damage they've done to Georgia's largest industry. This just cracks me up. It does. I'm sorry. I feel sorry for all these poor cracker farmers all over Georgia who, you know, just wait every year for the migrant workers to show up. They don't give a damn where they're from. They all look like Mexicans to a white Georgia farmer. They may be from Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico. It doesn't matter. They all look the same. Just like back in the day, all the darkies looked the same, right? I mean, you know, if you're a white Georgia farmer, they all look the same. But come on up, boys. Come on up and harvest all my crops. The average hourly wage up here for this kind of work is about $7 an hour over a 40-hour work week after taxes and everything in the South Georgia sun. It works out to around $300 a week. And anyway, this year, there's no workers. So Georgia farmers, bless their pea-picking hearts. Well, they're not going to be picking peas this year, are they? Bless their pea-picking hearts. We're going to have farmers here in Georgia not only go bankrupt, some of them are going to lose their farms. And I can't help it. I'm not a farmer. I understand, and I couldn't believe when Governor Nathan Deal signed this bill into law, anybody with the sense nature gave a sack full of marbles would have understood. But Governor Deal, you're cutting the throats of white people like you, Nathan, white farmers. You are cutting them so deep, they're going to bleed to death. Of course, you couldn't have told this dumb bastard that then, but now his Caucasian buddies are screaming bloody murder. Governor Deal, what you done to us? You kept all them darkies away, and now we got nobody to come down here and harvest our crops. Well, there's more of the story. Stick around. This cracks me up.
It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Kincaid has entered the amphitheater. The amphitheater is the Ustream chat room where, you know. Anyway, back to Georgia. Here in Georgia, so the governor here, Nathan Deal, just a cracker from the word go. I mean, his whole family is just crooked as a country road winding through some of these mountains up here. And he signed into law. It was House Bill 87. It's now law. It keeps the illegals out of Georgia. And now the farmers in South Georgia, which is about 80% of the state, is considered South Georgia. There's Atlanta, and then there's Georgia. And, let me tell you. So all the dark-skinned people that would come up here and pull Georgia farmers, chestnuts out of the fire every harvest time, are now not coming. So you got millions of crops laying in the fields starting to rot already. And the white farmers who own all this stuff are really pissed off at the white governor. But what are you going to do? You know, you can't run out in the field and say to the blueberries, stop ripening! So, according to a survey of 230 Georgia farmers conducted by our state agricultural commissioner, Gary Black, farmers expect to need more than 11,000 workers at some point over the rest of the season, a number that probably, as Jay Bookman writes, probably underestimates the real need, since not every farmer in the state responded to the survey. They're too busy out there pulling the damn blueberries themselves, trying to figure out how soon before the bank comes out and puts a foreclosure sign on the post up there at the top of the lane, huh? Nathan Deal, our governor, said, quote, the agricultural industry is the number one economic engine in Georgia, and it is my sincere hope to find viable and law-abiding solutions to the current problem our farmers face. Well, the current problem the farmers face is a result of Nathan Deal signing House Bill 87 that was put together by a bunch of old white boys who just in control now. You know, we're all Republicans now, God damn it, so let's go ahead and destroy the state. That's why we're here. I love it when you get one of these fools to make a major mistake like this and then stands up and says, well, you know what? Farming is one of the major engines driving the Georgia economy. And we got to figure out now how to solve this problem my useless ass created. I mean, I did it. Of course, I'm about as qualified to be governor as, I don't know, Newt Gingrich. So now what Deal is proposing is that farmers try to hire the estimated 2,000 unemployed former criminals who live, it's estimated, in Southwest Georgia. Southwest Georgia, for some reason, it's down there where Alabama, Georgia, and the Florida Panhandle all come together. And there's just a lot of ex-cons that live down there. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But the way it's set up in this country now and in this state, I'll tell you what, once you've served your time, you've hit the end of the road. You're 28 years old. You went to jail for some drug dealing or something. Your whole life is ruined now because now you are a drug offender, an ex-drug offender. So what do you do to make a living? Open up a meth lab, I guess, until that blows up in your face. If you get busted again, of course, then you get the three strikes and you're out thingy, and you've got you got a concrete roof over your head for the rest of your life. But the way things are set up in Georgia and most states, let's face it, especially here in the South, in the buckle of the Bible Belt, the way things are set up is once you lose, you've lost. You don't get a second chance to eat your bootstraps. And what they're figuring now, what the governor wants, is all those criminal probationers down in South Georgia to go out and pick blueberries for $7 an hour. Yes, indeed. According to the survey that was taken of these farmers, more than 6,300 of the unclaimed jobs pay an hourly wage of $7.25 to $8.99 an hour, or an average of roughly $8 an hour. Over 40-hour work week in the South Georgia Sun, and trust me, it's a mind blower. That's 320 a week before taxes, although most workers probably put in considerably longer hours. Another 3,200 jobs pay $9 to $11 an hour. And while the agriculture commissioner here in Georgia has been quoted as saying that Georgia farms provide $12, $13, $14, $16, $18 an hour jobs, the survey reported, out of the 15,000 jobs, only 169 of them pay $16 or more. So, I mean, it's madness. Madness. In addition, very few of the jobs include benefits. Only 7% of all these jobs offer health insurance. Barely a third are even covered by workers' comp. There's more. Stick around.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. Because I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best there's ever been." He played.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I'll do that. 25 before the hour. So, just to recap very quickly, the cracker governor of the state of Georgia, a real dumbass named Nathan Deal, who quit the U.S. House to run for governor because they're about to, the House of Representatives about to find him, investigate him. I don't know if they would have found him guilty of all kinds of scummy little ethics violations. Probably so. He's a real character, only not in the little Abner sense, or, you know, "Hey, you won't hear me play the banjo." Not in that sense at all. I mean, he's just a freak. But anyway, so he signed this bill that all the white Republicans in the legislature put together that would keep all those dark-skinned illegal immigrants out of Georgia. Because I think a lot of the good old boys getting tired of seeing them all clustered around Walmart, or not Walmart, but Home Depot, hoping that somebody in a pickup truck would pick up six or eight of them, take them out to the farm and, you know, put up shingles or something. I don't know. But anyway, in passing this bill, what Governor Nathan Deal did was guarantee that a certain number of farmers in the state of Georgia are now going to go bankrupt and lose their farms because they cannot harvest their crops. The main money-producing industry in this state is agriculture, and Nathan Deal cut the white farmers, and I say white farmers because black farmers long time ago learned how to do business without depending on the white man to help him get stuff done. That's just the way it is in the South, especially here in Georgia. So, but the white folks, they're a little bit different. They expect other people. I'm not saying white farmers don't work. It's just a white farmer go ahead and put 350 acres in blueberries and then wait for the immigrants to show up and go out and pick them. I'll tell you what. Take a look at 350 acres of blueberries and, you know, realize you got to have them picked within a week or they're going to rot. And then take your pulse. Or better yet, your blood pressure. So anyway, Nathan Deal signs the law. Now we got crops in the fields here in Georgia rotting. So, what to do? What to do? Now, the governor pledged that he would find a, quote, viable and law-abiding solution, end quote, to the problem that he created. That seems about as naive as it could possibly get. He's suggesting that ex-felons or people on probation, who all seem to cluster down in Southwest Georgia for some reason, that they be given the jobs that normally would go to people who will work in the hot Georgia sun doing stoop labor for $7 an hour. No, I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen at all. So how to get out of this? Well, as Jay Bookman suggests, who wrote this, it's hard to envision a way out. Georgia farmers could try to solve the manpower shortage by offering higher wages, but that would create an entirely different set of problems. If they raise wages by a third to a half, which is probably what it would take, that would drive up their operating costs and put themselves at a severe price disadvantage against competitors in other southern states that don't have such tough immigration laws. You see how this works? Huh? That's one of the major disadvantages of trying to implement immigration reform state by state rather than all at once. But one of the platforms of most Republican national or state committees during the last election was to save the precious white people from this onslaught of browns and blacks and assorted colors that keep flooding in, and Lord knows there are millions of them. Hell, they're just waiting to come in and take over the country, don't you know? That's why Oklahoma had to pass a law against Sharia, Islamic religious law being imposed on all the good citizens of Oklahoma. Oh, damn. Wasn't that something? Ain't never going to happen in Oklahoma. No, ain't going to happen. And a lot of other states, you know, to protect protect what? Used to be they had to protect white womanhood from, you know. But, you know, that's kind of passé now. So I don't know what was, oh, that's right. White Georgians need jobs. We have about a 10-point-something unemployment here in Georgia, a little bit higher than the phony-ass national average that says it's at 9-something. Actually, it's around 28 or 30, but we don't talk about that. That wouldn't be very Christian to talk about stuff like that, you know? So with this high unemployment rate, excuse me, the idea was that the brown people would do all the picking, and the white people would enjoy the benefits of the pickers. But they got all funky and put these laws, the Republicans ran for state office and local office. Hell, we had people running for boards of education around Georgia that said, yeah, we'll work for immigration reform, keep the darkies out. What the hell's that got to do with education? Well, you know, they come in here and they want us to educate their people. They come up here and they get on welfare. They do this and they do that, all of which is nonsense. They do not. So anyway, here we go. Georgia farmers are not going to pay more money to have their blueberries picked or their cotton picked or their peanut crop or corn or soybeans or tobacco, whatever the hell it is. Just not going to do it. They can't. So as Jay Bookman writes, the pain this is causing is real. People are going to lose their crops, and in some cases, they are going to lose their farms. The small town businesses that supply those farms with goods and services are going to suffer as well. For economically embattled rural Georgia, this could be a major blow. We are going to reap what we have sown, even if the farmers can't. Isn't that the way it always goes? Huh? Be careful what you wish for. You just, by God, might get it. And that was all the talk in Georgia during the last election cycle. Oh, by the way, this hour is sponsored by Andrew and Hexie Store. A proud supporter of Keeping It Lit, Hexie Store provides online computer backup services for small to medium businesses. To learn more, visit them at Hexie, H-E-X-I, Store, S-T-O-R.com, HexieStore.com. Thanks, Andrew. But the law of unintended consequences is a real monster where it concerns trying to interfere with the natural flow of things. The natural flow of things, as they say, in Georgia has always been, ever since they freed the slaves, damn them, the natural flow of things has been to allow dark-skinned people to come into Georgia at certain times of the year to harvest the crops. The dark-skinned people made piss poor wages. I mean, really, really terrible wages. But since they lived in even worse conditions provided by the Caucasian farmers, so most of the money that the dark-skinned workers made was sent back home to their dark-skinned countries. And what it guaranteed was people made a few bucks who didn't live here. The white farmers made even more. And people who went shopping at the local supermarket had a nice supply of fresh blueberries or whatever it is they were looking for. This year it's going to be different. So, I again, like I always do, because I'm not the brightest bulb in the marquee, I just wonder how much more of this will it take before folks realize that voting for Republican, a Republican, on any level is to some one degree or another either signing your own economic death warrant or the economic death warrant of your state, your county, your whole country. What does it take? What does it take? It's just astonishing. The short period of time ago when Governor Nathan Deal, he's got the dumbest cracker grin of any white person I think I've ever seen. This guy is just, I mean, he looks like, every time I see him, I hear banjos. And he's sitting there in his office with all these white legislators standing behind him, signing this thing into law. I remember thinking at the time, but do you not realize, does nobody realize? I mean, I run a 25-cent radio program, and I know what's going to happen. Does nobody? What about the farmers that voted these clowns into office? All those good Christian conservative, farmers. The heart and soul of Georgia. People go to church on Sunday and get ass drunk on Saturday night, but they go to church on Sunday, work hard, save their money so they can pay off their mortgage on the farm. Now they're going to lose the farm. Why? Because they voted for people who promised to put an end to illegal immigration and put Jesus back in the schools. How's that working out for you, boys?
To harvest your hearts, pick the beets from your ground, pick the grapes from your vines, to set on your table your light sparkling wine. It's green pastures aplenty from dry desert ground. From the Grand Coulee Dam, where our waters run down, every state in this union, us migrants, has been. And we'll work in this fight, and we'll fight until we win. And
this hour has been sponsored by Andrew, his message. Actually sponsored by Hexy Store, a proud supporter of Keeping It Lit. Hexy Store provides online computer backup services for small to medium businesses. You can learn more by visiting them at HEXI, Hexy Store, STOR.com. Check them out, Hexy Store. Got time for our evening correspondence from Prairie 2. This is played again, Sam. He writes, last week's initial unemployment claims were up again, and according to the chairman of the Federal Reserve, we could expect high unemployment to become the new normal for the long term. Even though the Federal Reserve is mandated by law to maintain low unemployment, not only have they thrown in the towel, but they're implying that there is nothing that can be done. Jeremy Bernanke also has claimed to be surprised at the high rate of inflation we are seeing. The Fed is surprised that when they printed $1 trillion and pumped it into a $15 trillion economy, that that would produce inflation. Mon Dieu, there's gambling at Rick's. I'm shocked, shocked, I tell you. In the meantime, the hero of the movie has been doing other things besides killing Major Strasser, I mean Bin Laden. The president has obtained a commitment from our allies to pump 60 million barrels of oil from strategic reserves to break the stranglehold Wall Street speculators have on the market, and more as needed. This produced an immediate and blistering response from the congressman representing Wall Street, who is currently serving as Speaker of the House. In his opinion, it is his opinion, that we don't have an emergency. Wall Street's doing just fine. We just need to drill more. Obama is blocking all drilling, you know. The twin finds in the Gulf of Mexico of 700 million barrels each announced 2 weeks ago notwithstanding. Each of these is equal to the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve. What Boner doesn't like is that Obama's maneuver might actually work. Gas prices had already begun to slide, which indicates that Wall Street is unable to hold them up, and further pressure should pop the bubble. If it works, it also proves that the proposed rules to ban oil speculation should be implemented, and Obama can use this against Republicans who have been predicting the end of the world if Wall Street was ever to be regulated. Anecdotal reports of large new factory expansions suggest the economy is in recovery, and a sharp cut in oil and gas prices could add significant stimulus. The position of the Fed that there will be inflation also forces the big corporations who are sitting on more than $2 trillion in cash to think about actually putting that money to work or watch it erode from inflation. These corporations were holding on to cash as a war chest, or more accurately, a pirate's chest. Ever since 2007, the economy has been teetering on the edge of runaway deflation and a general collapse. They were all positioning themselves to loot and pillage the economy for 10 cents on the dollar. If a more traditional rate of inflation can be cooked into the economy, that strategy falls apart. But runaway inflation must be avoided. On the other hand, and Obama taking an active role in controlling oil prices is required. To be clear, we are a long way from having a happy ending to our movie, since we still need a manufacturing policy, a trade policy beyond tactic cooperation from China, and 80% of Wall Street needs to be eliminated. I love that. But we do seem to have an inkling of an energy policy, at least when it comes to the Wall Street parasites. Maybe this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship after all, as Rick and Captain Renault stroll into the night. We will always have Paris, baby. PrairieNumeral2.com. I love the movie references. Gambling? Going on here? Mon Dieu! This could not be! Oh, by the way, as the economic gloom settles in on like a permanent basis, 9 out of 10 Americans, let me see, that'd be 90%, do not expect raises to compensate for rising price of goods. See, the inflation that Prairie 2 is talking about now. That Krugman, Paul Krugman says is incidental to anything, but we'll see. Price is going up, but wages are not. A new survey from American Pulse, released this month, shows that 9 out of 10 American workers are not expecting salary increases next year to compensate for the rising cost of basic necessities like fuel and food. I have news for us 9 out of 10 Americans. It's not just next year. It's for the foreseeable future. Anyway, faced with increasingly expensive purchases and stagnant salaries, 70% said they planned on changing their habits by buying only necessities going forward. Only 6.6% said they planned on changing nothing in their budgets. This is bad news, not just for the American worker, but for the economy as a whole. Because, as you know, consumer spending accounts for roughly 70% of GDP. If Americans are only spending on necessities, then we won't be driving economic growth. More of those unintended consequences, eh, corporate America? You capitalist pig bastards, huh? Right? Eh? Okay? In the first 3 months of this year, consumer spending expanded at a rate of 2.2%. Much slower growth than anticipated by those who anticipate. Nearly half of America thinks U.S. is nearing a second Great Depression, according to a CNN opinion research poll. While a new Gallup poll showed economic confidence plummeting, a third poll says, let's all line up and commit suicide. And the fourth one says, when do we get to board the starships and get out of here? We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Jim Cook.
John O'Connor. Thanks, John. Well, guess what? While we've been sitting here chatting about nonsensical stuff, lawmakers in New Jersey have approved, this is just like Wisconsin, have approved a broad rollback of benefits for 750,000 government workers and retirees, the deepest cut in state local costs in memory. In a major victory for Governor Chris Christie and a once unthinkable setback for the state's powerful public employee unions. That's how the New York Times leads with this. I wonder if we're getting closer. I wonder if we're getting any closer to that tipping point. The Assembly, New Jersey Assembly, passed the bill 46-32 as Republicans and a few Democrats defied raucous protests by thousands of people whose chants shook the State House. Leaders in the State Senate said their chamber, which had already passed a slightly different version of the bill, would approve the Assembly version on Monday, and Governor Christie, Republican, will quickly sign the measure into law. The legislation will sharply increase what state and local workers must contribute for their health insurance and pensions. It will suspend cost of living increases to retirees' pension checks. It will raise retirement ages, curb the union's contract bargaining rights, and it will save local and state governments $132 billion over the next 30 years, according to the Christie administration, and give the troubled benefit system a sounder financial footing, mostly by shifting costs onto workers. And the Times goes on, while states around the country have moved to cut labor costs and limit the power of unions, the move is all the more striking in New Jersey, a Democratic-leaning state where Democrats control both houses of the legislature and union membership is among the highest in the country. Most Democratic legislators opposed the reductions, but their leaders voted in favor of the changes, exposing deep, long-standing rifts in the party that lawmakers say could weaken it in coming elections. Well, really. Earlier today, thousands of people wearing union T-shirts and buttons filled the Assembly Visitors Gallery, the Statehouse corridors, sidewalks, lawns, and streets around the building. A procession down State Street included a hearse draped with a banner saying, quote, the soul of the Democratic Party, end quote. And organizers of the demonstration with bullhorns led the crowd in chants of "We'll remember in November." Will you really? What's November got to do with it? Election? So what? Your elections don't mean a goddamn thing, New Jerseyites, any more than it means anything here in Georgia. Election? Are you serious? So what are you going to do in November? Throw the bums out? And, of course, you can't throw Christie out, can you? How long has he been governor? Unions have been broadcasting advertisements attacking Democrats who supported the bill, particularly Stephen Sweeney, the Senate president. And this week, union leaders have spoken of the difference between real Democrats and Christie Democrats. That'd be like Reagan Democrats? What? Assemblyman Patrick Dignan, a Democrat from Middlesex County, said a few hours ago after the session ended, quote, this bill is not about savings. It is about breaking the backs of the hardworking men and women of the state. I challenge everyone in this chamber today. How many have even read the full 124 pages of union busting activities? So, firefighters, cops, school teachers, tough. How many of you voted, first of all, for Christie, second of all, for the Republicans, and third, for Democrats that have as much respect for the Democratic Party principles as Republicans do, huh? The legislation, according to Times, will supersede the right of teachers, police officers, and firefighters, where it concerns health benefits, allowing the state of New Jersey to impose health care terms unilaterally. For many workers, this means that if contract talks reach an impasse, the government will be able, at least in theory, to dictate all terms like wages, time off, and work rules. A professor of labor relations at Rutgers University said, quote, this bill cuts away the one issue, health care, that the unions could use to trade off against other things, end quote. State Director of the Communications Workers of America said, quote, this bill is nothing less than Chris Christie's frontal assault on organized labor. End quote, end quote, end quote, end quote, end quote, end quote. It, I guess it comes as a surprise to people who in New Jersey who have voted for Democrats to find out that the Democratic Party has very coldly and calculatedly stabbed them in the back. Isn't this amazing? The capitalist class, through its theft and fraud, not to mention its greed, of course, the theft and the fraud is inspired by the greed. Or is it the other way around? But the capitalist class destroys everything it touches. And then who takes the ass kicking? Who takes the ass kicking? They can't even get a bill passed that limits the amount of dirty tricks and thievery and fraud and corruption that goes on Wall Street, the generic term for these rat bastards. But who takes it in the chops? Workers. State workers, public employees, kill them, ruin them, destroy them. The one place left, public workers' unions, where there is organized labor. Do you see what's going on? It's being slowly, irrevocably, systematically, inexorably butchered, destroyed. So to firefighters, school teachers, and cops in New Jersey, it's a hell of a night for y'all, isn't it? Huh? Hell of a night for you. One more state bites the dust. And the thing that is just so, I mean, it really infuriates me. And I sit here in a state of fury almost every night. It's a big deal. But it raises the question again, yet again, how much longer? What is it going to take for the American working class / middle class to realize that it is being murdered? When are you going to wake the hell up and not vote for this guy or that woman? Get your ass into the street by the tens of millions and demand an end to this. When? What's it going to take? What's it going to take? Well, for people in New Jersey, apparently it's going to take more than just this, right? Legislature there and the governor have decided to stuff it into one of the collective body orifices of public workers, policemen, fire department, state troopers, emergency workers, nurses, school teachers, anybody who is a public employee, so-called. Your rights for collective bargaining have just been taken away from you in New Jersey. Plus, any chance of cost of living increases down the toilet. The retirement age was raised. Union contract bargaining rights down the toilet. Pension checks. All of it. Now, I wonder, Cindy writes, Mike, I wonder if all those Jersey cops are still going to don their riot gear and smack down the protesters. Yeah, you got to wonder about that, don't you? Once the cops realize, I don't know how long it'll take a New Jersey cop to realize that he or she has just had it shoved in and broken off. So the people in the street protesting this sort of thing, the people are protesting the cuts and the denial of collective bargaining rights to police unions, not to mention other first responders. So when ordered to, are the cops going to start clubbing the people who are demonstrating on behalf of the cops? Probably. But you just got to wonder how much more of this? Before the exceptional Americans realize what's going on. I don't get it. Like I say, I run a 25-cent radio program, and I get it. I would open a couple of arteries before I would ever vote Republican. So why do people vote Republican? I mean, what is your objective? Dear God. I mean, what? What is your goal in voting Republican? I've asked that for 20 years on this radio program. Give me a reason. Give me something that is A, logical, B, positive, C, rational, as to why anyone would vote Republican. And to this date, 20 years, 25 years, I have never gotten a clear, precise answer that didn't come out of the mouth of somebody else, and some moron calls this program and starts talking to me like Sean Hannity. Oh, and by the way, before I forget, you know who Russell Simmons is? Do you? A lot of white people don't have a clue, but he's the co-founder of the hip-hop label Def Jam. He's worth probably, I don't know, $500 million. Very wealthy man. He's the creator of the clothing fashion lines Fat Farm and all kinds of stuff. Russell Simmons has a piece at Huffington Post. I couldn't believe this. The headline, Sean Hannity is right. Russell, I'll tell you what, old buddy. I've never met you. I don't know you from Adam's house cat. And to me, or to you, I look like just a sea of white people that I know you've been trying your whole life to get away from. And frankly, I don't blame you. But for you to write this piece and have it published at Huffington Post, I'm just stunned. And I am so stunned that when we come back after the next break, I'm going to share it with you as much as I can. But Russell Simmons is suggesting that Roger Ailes or Sean Hannity are entitled to their opinions, which they certainly are, but entitled to broadcast them and influence the dumbasses in this society. In other words, to work against the best interests of the United States, because, as Russell Simmons tries to point out, Sean Hannity and Roger Ailes are sincere in their beliefs. Well, Russell, so is Adolf Hitler. So is Joseph Stalin. I mean, this is one of the most asinine op-ed pieces, if that's what you want to call it, I think I've ever come across. I'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen.
Humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by John O'Connor. Bless your heart, John. Thank you. Bruce writes, regarding the Democrats, one must keep in mind that many of the Democrats, quote, in office are selected by the same money people who select the Republicans. Any actual progressive Democrat faces a primary challenge from a corporate Democrat with unlimited funds. If the Democratic rank and file would learn from the teabaggers, they could have real Democrats with relatively little effort. Of course, this also depends on overcoming the election fraud of rigged voting machines and ballot box stuffing. Yes, indeed. All right, back to Russell Simmons. Russell writes, Fox News has always been the enemy to many on the left. No, the place where fair and balanced news is often tilted like a broken pinball machine, where talking point memos are created as marching orders for conservative America, the network that we assume to be evil. Yet what is hard to often swallow is that they are sometimes right. This is coming from Russell Simmons. See, money talks. Everything else crawls. Right, Russell? He goes on, this week I ran into two young assistants, Fox News, to Fox News host and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee at a restaurant, and got into a very intense conversation about gay marriage. As a strong supporter of marriage equality, I argued my points, but they were having none of it. One of them agreed that gay people should be allowed to wed, just don't call it marriage, call it something else. The other one was adamantly against the idea altogether. These two kids did not get angry, they just disagreed with me. And not only did they disagree, they went to sleep that night thinking they were right. Just like every night when Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck or Bill O'Reilly or Mike Huckabee get on the airwaves and think they are right. And you know what? They are right. They're just right to them. What? A few weeks ago, I phoned Sean Hannity after I called him a gangster in the news. And the first thing he asked me was, why did I believe he was more gangster than any rapper? Well, let's see. You're quicker to go to war when you think you are threatened. You are against gay marriage. You are more homophobic. You are less likely to allow people to have sexual freedom. You believe men have a place in society that's separate and somehow better or more powerful than women. You are not really racially integrated in this world. So, as far as I'm concerned, Sean is more gangster, more sexist, more homophobic, more racist than the average rapper. Later, I took back the racist thing. What? There's more. So as we were talking, Sean explained that all of these things are not true. He never dated black women, for instance, because he's married to his high school sweetheart. He never had a girlfriend. When I said that he thinks gay sex or gay relationships are an abomination in the Bible, he said that man has a role to protect women and do things, certain things, and God created a special order and we must follow it. When I argued about the 300,000 innocent Iraqis or Afghans that have been killed during Operation Freedom, he used that lovely term, quote, calculated loss, end quote. He is conservative in the true sense of the word. He lives by his book, and for that I have to respect him. Russell Simmons. I'll be double-D damned. You have to respect him? You have to respect him? Russell goes on, but I don't believe that everyone else has to be made to live by his book. People really believe in a strike-first foreign policy. It protects our country, so they say. They bully us and push us around so we bomb the blank out of them and wipe their country off the map. They really believe that. And while they believe all of this, they stomp on us. And while they are stomping, they smile as we just get angrier with them and with ourselves. So we turn them off, tune them out, and call them evil. That's where they win and we lose. We play on their battlefields, in their costumes, and in their language. And we forget that they may not be good for America, but they are really, really good for TV. And that is what the genius and my friend Roger Ailes is selling. TV. I don't think that Roger wants to do harm to America. I actually believe he wants to make this country a better place. But if that means that Fox News goes out of business, forget about it. I know that Sean Hannity believes in what he is saying. Instead of being the angry left, maybe if we took a moment and listened to them, there could be some common ground, more compromise, more bipartisan voting. Russell Simmons, you have taken one Valium too many, my man. Are you out of your goddamn mind? Apparently you are. Apparently you are insane. Russell, when did that happen? Is it that $350 million fortune that you sit on top of now? Did that elevate you up there where you can look those white people in the eye and tell us white people down here on the ground that they may be racist Nazis, but since they believe it, we got to respect them? Are you out of your mind, Russell Simmons? Is that what it's like up there where you live now? Is that what it's like when you're sitting on top of $350 million? Woo! More common ground, more compromise if we took a moment and listened to them. Russell, if you didn't have your $350 million, you think Sean Hannity would take your call? Do you think Roger Ailes would allow you to call him your friend? Are you serious? You are tripping, Russell. You are out of your mind. And now you're going to pass this garbage on to people who look up to you because you're sitting on a stack of $350 million. You are way up there, aren't you, Russell? He goes on. As progressives, one of the things it means is that we are open-minded. One of the things we stand for is a lack of rigidness. We have always led with compassion, while conservatives lead with values and safety. What? What? There's more. But if we don't listen, then we are no better than they are. We will end up walking out of meetings with the vice president just like them. Because at the end of the day, Sean Hannity and his boys think they are right. And we think we are right. All patriots want this country to be more perfect. We all believe in our hearts that our way is right. I didn't say turn on Fox News. As you know, my politics are to the left of Dennis Kucinich. But when it's on and you walk by and you hear their rhetoric, don't assume they're wrong. What? A great yogic teacher said, quote, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason, end quote. You don't have to agree with them, you just have to listen. Well, Russell, let me tell you something. In order to listen, you got to pull your head out of your own ass, pal. So don't be talking to me about two ears and one mouth. Get your head out your ass. Are you serious? Russell Simmons? Sean Hannity is right. We have to listen to them. Well, the founder of the hip-hop label Def Jam has just handed you a lecture. I don't care if you're black or white. Russell Simmons has just given you word up. Listen to Sean Hannity. Because Sean Hannity believes in what he says. Well, Russell, you know, there was a time right here in the great state of Georgia where they believed in lynching black folk. And don't kid yourself for a second that somebody like Sean Hannity, given the right circumstances, wouldn't jump on that train once again. Now, I've just put together a nice 5 or 6 minute segment for the right-wing blog suckers to cut out, make a nice little thing. I need the publicity, boys, so do it. Let's see. Let me write your headline. Liberal Malloy attacks Russell Simmons. No, let me say. Liberal Malloy attacks founder of Def Jam. No, let me think. I don't care. Make your own headline, boys, but get it out there. I want it out there tomorrow. And you can use whatever funky picture of me you want to use. I'm sure you'll find one where my mouth is open and my ears are peeled back, whatever. Go ahead. But just get the damn thing out there. Get it out tomorrow. Liberal talker, psycho liberal talker Malloy, goes after Russell Simmons. Says that Sean Hannity would lynch black people. There you go. Liberal Tucker Malloy says Sean Hannity wants to lynch black people. There's your headline. There's your headline, you little cockroaches. Now get it out. I want to see it. I want the emails coming in tomorrow. I want to hear from all these unable to spell crackers who are writing to me saying, what's the matter? Do you don't like your N buddies anymore? What's the matter, Malloy? Come on, boys. Get it on.
First. That's why I'm spitting cyanide each and every verse. I see the Carlisle Group and Harris bank accounts. I see them plead the fifth each and every session now. Cause America's been took, it's plain to see. The oldest trick in the book is making enemies. A phony evil so the government can do its dirt. And take away your freedom, lock and load, keep and search. Oil, blood, money make these killers ride cold. Suspicious suicide, people dying never told. It's all a part of playing God, so you think we need them. While being ass crossed, take away your rights to freedom. Bear witness to the sickness of these dictators. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major.
It's Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. It is right now. This hour has been sponsored by John O'Connor. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Now, the other... God, we're just hitting so much economics today. I hope you're hanging in there. I should leave this all up to a prairie, too, but what the hell. There's this thing floating out there right now, this idea that the Republicans, the butt boys, the capitalists, are putting out there, a tax repatriation holiday. Have you heard about this yet? This is where you let multinational corporations who have been cheating the U.S. Treasury get a time out, get a break to bring all the money back, the tax money, repatriate. The tax money, and as pointed out by Jared Bernstein, senior fellow at Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, they get to repatriate the money at a much reduced rate, only 5%. This is like when you have library books that are overdue, and they had to declare a holiday, or you have parking tickets, and they say, okay, bring in your parking tickets, even though it's up to $150 now, bring them in, we'll let you off for $30 a ticket. Now, that kind of makes sense if you find anything sensible about parking tickets to begin with. But to say to these multinational corporations, these billionaire sons of bitches sitting on huge mountains of money, even more than you have, Russell Simmons. Oh, yeah, Russell, let me tell you something. Your $340 million that you're worth, lunch money to some of these people. I don't think you'll ever make it into that circle you want to get into, Russell, but you got a good thing going there, hanging out with Roger Ailes and talking trash with Sean Hannity. Ooh, golly. Anyway, I digress. So a tax repatriation holiday. This is where corporations hide the money they owe the government overseas. And now the talk is, okay, look, the United States is going bankrupt, so let's do our part. Come on, corporations. Instead of 35% tax rate, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do 5%. And if you don't settle with us right away, we'll do 4. How's that grab you? And as Jared Bernstein points out, the core of the critique is that while the corporations who take advantage of this claim say they'll invest the tax windfall and create more jobs, the evidence shows otherwise. This is done before, back in 2004. So Jared says, all right, listen to my buddy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, Chuck Maher and Brian Highsmith. Here's what they say. A tax holiday enacted in 2004 failed to produce the promised economic benefits. Ooh, there's a surprise. The evidence shows that firms mostly use the repatriated earnings not to invest in U.S. jobs or growth, but for purposes that Congress sought to prohibit, such as repurchasing their own stock?
Oh, yeah.
Additionally, many firms actually laid off large numbers of U.S. workers, even as they reaped multi-billion-dollar benefits from the tax holiday and passed them on to their already wealthy shareholders. You see how that works? So here we go again. Oh, yeah, we'll bring all this money back in. You know, we'll wink, wink, nudge, nudge, create jobs. Are you fools going to go for it again? Repeating the tax holiday would increase incentives to shift income overseas. If Congress enacts a second tax holiday, rational corporate executives will conclude that more tax holidays are likely in the future, and that will make corporations more inclined to shift income into tax havens and less likely to make investments in the United States. Really? Would that really happen? Would these American corporate capitalist bastards actually do that in the very country where they reside? You know, God bless America. That place? Would you guys do that? Sort of like, if we bail out the banks, they'll just set up another scam and we can bail them out again, just like we did the savings and loan. Oh, well, who cares? There are 330 million sucker fools in this country. And about 3 or 4 million sitting at the top of the pile, way above you, Russell, who keep doing this. And the 330 million sucker fools sitting down here, not at the top, just keep doing it, don't we? Just keep, well, you know, we got to vote for these people because they'll stop the queers from getting married. Yeah, okay. But economically, they're cutting your throat and your children, your grandchildren, your nieces and nephews, your mama, your daddy, your auntie, everybody. Yeah, but the queers can't get married. Oh. More. The claim that a tax holiday would increase domestic investment by freeing multinationals from cash restraints is extremely dubious. U.S. non-financial corporations, non-financial, currently have $2 trillion in cash and other liquid assets, the highest level as a share of total corporate assets since 1959. The 10 companies lobbying hardest for a new tax holiday alone have at least $47 billion in cash and other liquid assets that could be used for domestic investments without triggering additional tax liability. But you know what they say? Nah, we're not going to do that. We are the capitalist masters of you 330 million sucker fools. We are going to continue to milk you like the dumb bovine beast that you are. We're going to continue to do this. And you know why? Because you're never going to stop us. Did you see what our pals over in the New Jersey legislature did this evening? Did you see that? What you going to do about it? Vote him out of office? Woo! Scare me! Ow!
It's 7 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. Thank you, LD. Anonymous. Appreciate the sponsorship very much. All right, I got two responses here on the Russell Simmons thing, but I'll get to it in just a second. Right before the break, we're talking about this move that's afoot to have a tax repatriation holiday for corporate America. To allow these thieving sons of bitches to bring back all the money they've been hiding that they owe the government, bring it back into the country, not at the 35 or 20 or 15% tax rate that they'd have to pay, but, you know, give the rich devils a break. They want to give 5%. We'll bring it all back for 5%. Billions upon billions if you just take, you know, 5 cents on the dollar. Okay? Deal? What you say, Mr. President? Deal? Slimy bastards. Jared Bernstein, who's the senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, says it's all a bad idea. So do his colleagues Chuck Maher and Brian Highsmith. And I was sharing with you some of the reasons. Here's one more reason why this is a bad idea. Some of the biggest beneficiaries of a tax holiday would be these firms that have aggressively shifted income overseas. Aggressively shifted in order to avoid paying anything here where they're based. You know, first remove the jobs, then remove the corporate structure, then change your corporate headquarters. Just get it all out of here. Even though you are still subject to American laws. Anyway, companies in the technology and pharmaceutical industries have been particularly aggressive in shifting incomes abroad because they rely on intellectual property, which is relatively easy to shift to other countries as a tax avoidance strategy. Half of all the repatriations that came from that 2004 tax holiday came from companies, half of it in those two sectors alone, technology, pharmaceuticals. The same corporations and sectors would stand to benefit disproportionately and enormously from a second tax holiday. Well, sure. I mean, excuse me, this is the way it works. We sucker fools down here on the bottom 95% or 96% of us, that's right, the bottom 90, that's how lopsided it's become. The bottom 96, 97% of us are sitting back on our multicolored asses just watching these corporations continue to gouge and rip and destroy and tear and eat and shred everything about this country, and we do nothing about it. Of course we don't. We just go about our business. I don't know. And according to Jared Bernstein, lately some folks have suggested ways to make this bad idea work better by assigning any revenue from it to infrastructure projects, or by making receipt of the windfall conditional on new hires. Something. Make the capitalist bastards give us something. Infrastructure. New hires. Something. No. This is already highly dubious, Jared Bernstein writes, because the damn thing scores as adding $80 billion to the deficit over 10 years. So, like, where's the new revenue? These ideas violate both of the policy rules. I can easily imagine, he says, legislation that ends up saying essentially, okay, for every gazillion dollars you repatriate, you have to create one part-time job that has to last at least 20 minutes. Plus, why do we want a hiring credit that only applies to multinationals that squirrel their profits away overseas? For that matter, why do we want to advantage these firms relative to our wholly domestic ones? Why? Why? Jared Bernstein says, I've got a good, simple idea that solves everything. And it's one we proposed during my time in the Obama administration. No more deferral of taxes on overseas profits. Boom, problem solved. Why, of course. But
But once again, have you noticed a pattern? If you're still conscious, if you still have any part of your gray matter left, do you get it? It never stops. Not only do the capitalists screw us left and right, but anytime they get their testicles in a tight spot, we are supposed to gently extricate them, which means socialism for us, or them, capitalism for us. That's how it always works. Socialism for them, that means we foot the bill. And capitalism for us, which means that when the capitalists decide it's time to cut our throats shall be cut. Period. That's it. Teabaggers, Republicans, conservatives, they love that idea. And they love it because, well, you know, it's never going to happen to them. Bruce writes, Russell Simmons demonstrated that he isn't any smarter than the average teabagger. You don't have two ears to satisfy some karmic equation. You know, Russell Simmons says, some karmic, or some Zen master said that there's a reason you have two ears and one mouth. Ooh. Ooh, Russell. Damn. Bruce writes, you don't have two ears to satisfy some karmic equation. It's for direction finding. So you can tell which direction the tiger is coming from, or the lynch mob. He has also fallen for the karmic false premise that balances everything. All we need to do is compromise with the right, and we'll meet in the middle. The tiger's right behind him. It's hungry. And yeah, we'll meet in the middle of the tiger's stomach. Yeah. Okay. That's from Bruce. And from Dr. Sachs, who plays and travels in the Count Basie Orchestra. Now, Dr. Sachs, I'm going to read this the way you wrote it, except the N-word. I'm not going to use the N-word, but I'm going to read it the way you wrote it. Oh, help me, Lord, feats don't fails me now, Lord. Russell Simmons done been absorbed and done lost his fool mind. He think all that money he be having make him no stuff. I'm going to have to maculate this place up now. It's just all dirty with them fool thoughts he be having. Oh, Lord Jesus. I had Herman Cain in first place for most embarrassing Negro of the year, but whoa, he has a serious contender now. In fact, I nominate Russell Simmons as most embarrassing Negro of the year because that N-word should know better. Woo, Dr. Sachs, ow!
He just won't be happy.
I hear you. I hear you. I hear you, Dr. Sachs. Whew. Feats don't fails me now. Well, see, that's what happens when you get up to the elevated point of Russell Simmons and start talking about Sean Hannity is right. And he's right because he firmly believes in the right-wing neo-fascist, racist, Nazi garbage that he puts out there every day, the ignorance. So, Russell, I don't want to get back on that because, Russell, I've already cut my 15 minutes out for these right-wing bloggers to make a real nice audio tomorrow to be all over the place. You'll hear about it, Russell. You'll get. I don't want to go back to it. But, dear God, Russell, how can you say, how can you refer to Roger Ailes as your friend? Because you both have $300 million? Do you think Roger Ailes considers you a friend? You... Do you?
You got me running, going out of my mind. You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time. Don't bring me down. No, 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 no. I'll tell you one more before I get out the door. Don't bring me down. You got me shaking, got me running.
scream, you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Email here from Jamie fighting in Maryland. Jamie writes, "Hey, Mike, the whole argument that citizens living under the iron rule of Republicans now have buyer's remorse for how they voted last fall falls flat for me. Where were they last year? Where have they been the last decade? Are they kidding? How effing stupid are Americans? Anyone with two brain cells could see this coming. If that sounds harsh, too bad. We don't have time for niceties. Just wait till the 2012 elections. This may be the end." Well, I don't wish the Republicans and disgustingly more and more Democrats sell out of America and Americans on anyone. How people vote this coming year in Republican-run states won't matter. The damage is done, and those states are toast. New Jersey's newest attack dog laws are in effect for 30 years. Even if the state assembly flips to Democrat, that blank blank Christie will still be in power and will veto any attempt to overturn these draconian laws. Think about the Medicare defrauder and evil incarnate running the state of Florida, Rick Scott. I guess the sun does actually bake people's brains. How else can anyone explain voting that freak in criminal as governor? One more question. How can we get Russ Feingold to run for president? Thanks. Jamie, fighting in Maryland. I don't know. I don't know why. Not to be too negative, but why would someone who is basically, I don't know, Russ Feingold from Adam's house cat, and he's another one whose votes where it concerns Israel are so one-sided. But aside from that, let's stipulate that and move on. Someone who is a decent human being, except for that thing, why would he want to run for president? Knowing full well that the body politic, so-called, in this country has become so desensitized to its own murder and so willing to buy the deception and the lies and the TV commercials that depict real Democrats or real progressives as just a little bit lower than snake droppings in a wagon rut, why would somebody want to run for president in a country that produces the crop of governors? I mean, take a look. Look at Ohio. Look at New Jersey. Look at Michigan. Look at Wisconsin. Jesus God, look at Mississippi. Look at Georgia. Look at Florida. Look at South Carolina. Virginia. Maine, for God's sake. And old Governor Cuomo in New York is not identifying himself as a liberal either, is he? Why would somebody like Russ Feingold take a look at that and say, "Oh yeah, I want to be the president of an armed madhouse. I want to be the president, you know, and it'll be great running for president because I'm Jewish and I know that they are really, really, really going to come after me on that one." I'm not talking about that Malloy. He comes after anyone who's Jewish that doesn't support those damn Palestinians. I'm talking about they will come after me because I'm Jewish. And I think that Russ Feingold understands that. Why would a rational human... I mean, take a look at what's out there as declared candidates right now to be president of the United States next. Take a look at them. Do you see anything in that crop of freakish fools that you can take seriously? Russ Feingold looks at that and goes, pass. No. Michelle. Bachman. John Huntsman riding his little Vespa across the desert? Ooh. Who was it told me the agency that put that ad? You've seen the ad. Guy riding across the desert in a little on a little Vespa, putt-putt, whatever the hell it is, and there's a couple lines of type, no voiceover, just... The ad agency that put that together is the same agency that put this one together. I'm not a witch. I'm you. Oh, my God. Okay. We'll be right back. In Fort Worth, Texas, just sent me a missive here. Hi, Mike. One of the great political mysteries to me has always been how on earth the money-worshipping, screw-the-poor right-wing in today's America have somehow managed to convince many people that the Bible supports their twisted beliefs. The following is from the Bible, James, verse 5, chapters 1 through 4. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. From the book. Thanks, Mark. Well, my favorite is what about the, you know, rich man entering into heaven and the camel passing through the eye of the needle. I don't get it either. I have no idea. I don't know how. What so many people consider holy text. I mean, Bible-believing Christians will tell you that, I mean, the really serious ones, they will tell you all about the inerrancy of the Bible. Every single word, comma, semicolon, was put there by the mighty finger of God operating through somebody who wrote it, right? Even though you can... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to get into that. But if that is true, then... Oh, never mind. Last night was church. And we didn't do it. This is Thursday. Oh, speaking of craziness in the state legislatures, I am from Ohio. Shudder. I am from Toledo, Ohio. Double shudder. It was a great place when I was a kid growing up. I've said that a million times, but, you know. Anyway,
The Republicans in Ohio are now going after Lake Michigan, or Lake Erie. I'm sorry, Lake Erie. With a single Democrat joining Republicans in support, the Ohio House of Representatives voted 60-37 to approve a bill allowing heavy manufacturers, mining operators, power plants, and other businesses to draw up to 5 million gallons of water a day directly from Lake Erie before facing regulation. As the bill, as the law stands right now, regulation is imposed when a business makes a net withdrawal of 2 million gallons a day within the watershed that supplies Lake Erie. Now the Republicans have said, nah, come on, Jesus Christ, who came up with that? Some tree hugger? So it now goes to the another psychotic governor, John Kasich, and this guy really is crazy, for his signature. The bill's sponsor, Representative Wachtman, a Republican from Napoleon, Ohio, which is not that far from Toledo, says that Ohio's environment and Ohio's economy will be okay with this bill. Oh, by the way, Representative Wachtman, he says we can do both. We can protect the environment, and we can make sure that jobs are protected, that economic growth is protected. And that's what this bill does. Really? How does it protect jobs? How does it spur economic growth? How does that work, Representative Wachtman? Little something you ought to know about him. He is the owner of a water bottling company that draws water from the watershed that feeds Lake Erie. Now, if you've ever been on Lake Erie, I've been on Lake Erie so many times. I used to go fishing. Lake Erie is a very shallow lake. I have been in the middle of that lake, what appears to be the middle. I mean, you can see land, obviously, but it's one of the Great Lakes. It's a monster lake. It's very dangerous because it is so shallow. I have been on that lake, out in the middle of it, so to speak, and look at the depth finder, and it says 6 feet. And the little depth map or whatever the hell you call it, the radar, whatever it is, will show you the bottom of Lake Erie, just 6 feet below you. And it's pretty scary. I had a good friend that was a boat nut, Jerry. And matter of fact, he had a publication for a number of years called Play Buoy, until he got a letter from the Playboy organization that said, no, 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 no. It was even in the type style, Playboy magazine, Play Buoy. So he changed it. What did he change it to, Kathy? Scuttlebutt. He changed the name of the Scuttlebutt. And it was a real popular boat with the boating crowd around Lake Erie, from Sandusky, Cleveland, all the way up to Detroit, actually. And popular little magazine. He made a good living. And since he was in the business, he was always coming across deals. I don't know how he did it, but Jerry always managed to have usually a 20-year-old Chris Craft, usually around 40 or 50 feet, big honking boat. And I don't know how he did it. I have no idea, because, you know, he made a living, but he sure as hell didn't make enough money to pay for something like that. But he always had a boat like that, and he used to, you know, he would take us out. He took Kathy and I out one time. And my mother, the last year of her life, matter of fact, about 3 or 4 months before she died, and she was in a wheelchair at the time, and we were out on Lake Erie, and a storm came up. Now, you don't want to be on Lake Erie when a storm comes up and be in a cabin cruiser. But anyway, we survived, obviously. But the point of that little story is simply, I know Lake Erie, and there are fish in Lake Erie. They're called walleyes, and they're edible. You can eat them. Walleyes are what? They're part of what? Are they bass? I don't know. But people wait for the walleyes to start running. And you can get out there. You can throw a line in with any kind of bait. You can use a lure. You can use live bait. And you can catch them one after another. Woo! When I was a kid, we used to go to the beach up there, and then the beaches all got polluted and destroyed. And then laws were passed to bring them back. And that partly, walleyes are pike, pickerels. Okay. The lakes came back. They made a comeback. And it was because all the states that border the Great Lakes and two provinces in Canada agreed to certain restrictions. And they did so in order to save the Great Lakes. It was an international agreement that, you know, required some negotiations, but it was a it was approved in 2008 by eight states, two Canadian provinces, and Congress. And it was a compact that was crafted to unite the region in protecting this freshwater source from poaching by thirsty states and nations, right? So how long has this Kasich bastard been the governor of Ohio? Huh? Now they are getting ready to violate the compact. I hope the Canadian provinces, I guess it would be Ontario and which other one would be involved in this? I don't have a map in front of me. I should know, but I don't. I hope the Canadian provincial governments will file a lawsuit to stop this. Because the state of Ohio, the pigs that run the state, they don't care. They don't give a damn. The compact left it up to the states to develop standards for reasonable use of Great Lakes water. And this proposal exceeds those of all the other states and the two Canadian provinces. But John Kasich doesn't care. And especially these little tin horn little bastards who operate in the state legislature. Like Representative Lynn Wachman, Republican of Napoleon, Ohio, owner of a water bottling company that draws water from the watershed. Why should he have to follow some stupid-ass law agreed to by eight states, two Canadian provinces, environmentalists, and the U.S. Congress? Huh? I ask you, why?
Your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Anonymous. What is this? A woman cooked her baby in a microwave oven? Never mind. I don't want that one. Oh, God. What else we got? What do I want to leave you with tonight so you'll definitely have nightmares? The this might do it. Although I don't know, it's getting very hard to find stories or reports in what passes as news dialogue that still is capable of shocking or scaring. I mean, we have overarching issues that should put anyone with any kind of hope for the future into a state of absolute slobbering panic, whether it is worries about economics or worries about the environment, worries about the planet, you know, really. So when you start reducing from those all-encompassing issues down to something that's a little bit easier to grasp in terms of the horror of it all, that's when you start to go mad. You ever notice that? You start to lose whatever tenuous grips you still have on reality. That's how it works for me. Anyway, scientific experts believe that Japan's nuclear disaster to be far worse than is being reported. Arnold Gunderson, a former nuclear industry senior vice president, said, quote, Fukushima is the biggest industrial catastrophe in the history of mankind. End quote. Gunderson is a licensed reactor operator with 39 years of nuclear power engineering experience managing and coordinating projects at 70 nuclear power plants around the U.S. He says that the Fukushima nuclear plant likely has more exposed reactor cores than commonly believed. He said, quote, Fukushima has 3 nuclear reactors exposed and 4 fuel cores exposed. You probably have the equivalent of 20 nuclear reactor cores because of the fuel cores, and they are all in desperate need of being cooled, and there is no means to cool them. TEPCO, the company, the Japanese company that owns this reactor and operates it, has been spraying water on several of the reactors and fuel cores, but this has led to even greater problems, such as radiation being emitted into the air in steam and evaporated seawater, as well as generating hundreds of thousands of tons. Let me say it again. Hundreds of thousands of tons of highly radioactive seawater that has to be disposed of. The nuclear expert, Mr. Gunderson, says, quote, the problem is how to keep it cool. They are pouring in water, and the question is, what are they going to do with the waste that comes out of the system? Because it's going to contain both plutonium and uranium. Where do you put the water? He goes on to say the fuels are now a molten blob at the bottom of the reactor. TEPCO announced they had a melt through. A meltdown is when a fuel collapses to the bottom of the reactor, and a melt through means it has melted through some layers. That blob is incredibly radioactive, and now you have water on top of it. The water picks up enormous amounts of radiation, so you add more water, and you are generating hundreds of thousands of tons of highly radioactive water. Independent scientists have been monitoring the location of radioactive hotspots around Japan, and their findings are disconcerting. Gunderson says, quote, we have 20 nuclear cores exposed. The fuel pools have several cores each. That is 20 times the potential to be released than Chernobyl. The data I'm seeing shows that we are finding hotspots further away than we had from Chernobyl. And the amount of radiation in many of them was the amount that caused areas to be declared no man's land for Chernobyl. We are seeing square kilometers being found 60 to 70 kilometers away from the reactor. You can't clean this up. We still have radioactive wild boar in Germany 30 years after Chernobyl. And this is 20 times the potential of Chernobyl. One of our
correspondents, Tim in Los Angeles, wrote me something, sent me a couple of links a couple of weeks ago about this very topic, and it's on the stack of stuff to get to, and I never got to it. A nuclear waste advisor to the Japanese government reported that about 966 square kilometers near the power station, an area roughly 17 times the size of Manhattan, is now likely uninhabitable. Pleasant dreams. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Becky, thank you.